Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. And today's program is dedicated to Sun Sounds staff member, Jim Bigler. And we begin our program with some daily selections from Science of Mind, Guide for Spiritual Living. We do have the July-August issue, and the theme is Rolling in the Deep. This month's daily guides were written by Ron Fox. We are one, after all, you and I. Together we suffer, together exist, and forever will recreate each other. Thérèse de Chardin. I always feel honored to have the opportunity to write the daily guides for your enjoyment and spiritual inspiration. I offer them as a tool to help you commune with spirit on a deeper level. There are many ways to use these writings. I find it useful to read them early in the morning and reflect on them during the day. However you choose to incorporate them into your spiritual practice, I hope they serve you well. Reverend Dr. Ron Fox has served in several pulpits in the course of his ministry. He's a past recipient of CSL's Meritorious Minister Award. He lives in Port St. John, Florida, with his wife, Becky, who is an artist and a CSL practitioner emeritus. Moving beyond our story. We don't see things as they are. We see them as we are, attributed to Anais Nin. We will always attract to us in our lives and conditions according to our thought. Things are but manifestations of inner mental concepts. Ernest Holmes, Creative Mind and Success, page 17. We can get trapped in the story version of our life. We tell ourselves things like, I'm worthless. I'll never amount to anything. I'm a failure. I don't deserve happiness. And then we get stuck in the story and look for evidence that supports it. We have to start noticing the stories we tell ourselves, not just what they are, but how they affect our lives. Here's an example. An athletic young man was paralyzed by a football injury. The immediate story he told himself was, my life was great. Now it's over. As months went by, his story changed. Before my injury, I partied a lot. I didn't think about others. I lived a purposeless life. I can be a better man. He went on to college and got a counseling degree. Because we are the authors of our stories, we can change how we tell them. We can make what one psychologist called narrative choices. We can edit, reinterpret, and retell our stories. The Buddha asks, who is your enemy? Mind is your enemy. Who is your friend? Mind is your friend. Learn the ways of the mind. Tend the mind with care. Affirmation. Today, I move within and remember that with God, Spirit, the universe, all things are possible. I remember I am one with the power that created all that is, and I can use that power to create the life I want. We are one. No man is an island, entire of himself. Any man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. John Donne, For Whom the Bell Tolls. The person who has learned to love all people, no matter who they may be, will find plenty of people who will return that love. Ernest Holmes, Creative Mind and Success, page 20. Several years ago, I wrote about my daughter's pet pig, Wilbur. My daughter loves him and dotes on him. When I visit, I see a homely animal who growls at me and doesn't want me near him. The lesson is that my daughter looks beyond the surface appearance and sees the beauty within. It works the same way with people. It is so easy to label people, to respond to them as stereotypes. When we reduce people to labels, we deny their humanity. All people matter to God, to spirit, to the universe. We need to accept others as they are. No one has to change for us. The quote above from John Donne speaks to our oneness, our unity. It invites us to look beyond the surface, to see ourselves connected to everyone. We are diverse in so many ways. Race, color, gender, religion, political views, yet we are all part of the human race. That is what binds us. Holmes taught that love masters everything. He wrote, we can so train our ears to listen to the divine harmony within that we shall reproduce its melody, rhythm, and beauty in all our ways. Imagine what life would be like if we all did that. Affirmation. Today I take the time to go within and listen to that still small voice calling me to make my life about love. I accept everyone as a unique child of God, of spirit, of the universe, and I rejoice that we are all brothers and sisters. And from the Daily Word published by Unity, Alive. I am gloriously alive. I am magnificently made, a child of God, of spirit, of the universe, an expression of divine life. With every breath I take, I celebrate this life. I thrive because I am awake to my divine nature. Divine light shines within my soul. Divine life flows throughout my body. Divine love lives in my heart. Expressing these qualities, I live with understanding and compassion. I know my mind and body are continually renewed and rejuvenated. I live a life of peace and harmony. I prioritize enlivening activities, spending time in nature, challenging myself by learning a new skill or pursuing a hobby, connecting with family and friends. I set my intention to try new things that inspire and uplift me. My soul overflows with gratitude and grace. Gloriously alive, I live an abundant life. Self-expression. I give expression to my divine nature. My life is full. When I receive a gift, I may be surprised by the giver's thoughtfulness, dazzled by the pretty wrapping paper and colorful ribbons, and excited, wondering about its contents. But I have to open it to see what's inside. My divine identity is perhaps my most precious gift. It's not enough just to know I have it. I must express myself to reveal my gifts to myself and everyone else. The love in my heart, the heights of my imagination, and the zeal that kindles my passion help me take my place in the world as only I can. The world is made more complete through my self-expression. As I step out boldly to share my gifts with the world, my life becomes more rich and full. And from Mark Nepo's The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, moments, not words. Like the moon, come out from behind the clouds and shine, Buddha. When I think of those who've taught me how to love, moments come to mind, not words. As far back as grade school, when Lori wouldn't stop spinning when recess ended, spinning to a deeper, higher call, she laughed, her little head back, her arms wide, trying to hug the world. Then the day Kennedy was shot, there was my choir teacher, Mr. P, crying for a man he didn't know, letting us go home, but I came back to hear him play a sad piano to what he thought was an empty room. And Grandma holding my little hands open on her basement steps saying, "These are the oldest things you own." Or the changing faces I would wake to at the foot of my bed while recovering from surgery. Or my father-in-law watering black walnuts 6 inches high that wouldn't be fully grown for 150 years. Or my oldest friend who always listens like a lake. Though words can carry love, they often point to it. It is the picking up of something that has dropped and the giving of space for someone to discover for themselves what it means to be human and the forgiving of mistakes when we realize that we've done. Center yourself and bring to mind three people who have taught you how to love. As you breathe, recall the moment that revealed each lesson. Discuss these teachings with a loved one. And we return to Science of Mind for Eugene Holden's personal affirmations for July. Rolling in the deep. Deepen. With all that is going on these days, it's important to deepen our awareness of the source of life. Call it God, spirit, universal intelligence, but call it forth into your conscious awareness. I affirm that I am anchored in the one power, presence, and source of life. I call forth the power of this love to guide me in all my affairs. Flying higher. The deeper we go into who we really are as spiritual entities having a physical experience, the higher we get to fly as the presence of the divine. I declare my divinity. I fly on the wings of love. I see through the eyes of peace, grace, and forgiveness. I am one with the one. The pebble. We've heard about being the pebble that causes the ripples, right? However, we tend to focus on the ripples and forget about the pebble. The pebble settles into the depths of the stillness where it experiences fulfillment. Be fulfilled in the stillness. In the stillness of spirit, I live in the knowing that my presence brings joy to the world. I create ripples of joy, and I am settled in the stillness of love. Be still and know. As we deepen our awareness of who we are in God, in spirit, in the universe, we take time to be still, to know we are guided to greater experiences of life. Be still and know that all is well. And we turn now to my favorite column. You guessed it, Murphy's Dogma. Pause, P-A-W-S, with perspective. Kind hands. I watched an angry man go calm when handed a four-month-old puppy. His voice softened and a smile spread across his face. Anger has no grip on a person eating an ice cream cone, feeding birds in the park, or lifting others up when they have fallen. Kind hands move the heart to love. I watched a new mother smile as she gently traced the features of her baby's face. Her fingers spoke a thousand words that mothers understand and every baby needs to hear. I watched a survivor of life's sharp edges bend down to save a broken sparrow. As she lifted the sparrow, I saw her luminous wings of white and gold. I saw the spark of love that inspires the sun to rise each morning. I watched her wrinkles fade and her face glow. I felt her heart dance to the eternal rhythm of love. When I watch the fingers of a musician pluck the strings of a bass or banjo, something wonderful happens to me that I can't explain. When I see the hands of a musician commanded by some unseen force explore and discover the music hidden in a piano, I smile on the inside. Hands are tools to be used for many things. Praying hands encourage the heart and mind to follow. Helping hands end wars. Kind hands make it hard to hate. Kind hands heal, give strength and courage to those they touch, and clear the way for love. How do you use your hands in kind ways? You have the ability to change lives. Murphy the Human Whisperer watches over his human, Dr. Bob Luckin, when he isn't working on his column. Send your questions to murphy@csl.org. Regretfully, he cannot reply to all email. And from the same issue, an article by Julie Moreau, Deo Gracias, honoring Dorothy Day and the American traditions of nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience. The greatest challenge of the day is how to bring about a revolution of the heart, a revolution which has to start with each one of us, Dorothy Day. The words inscribed on her tombstone, Deo Gracias, thanks be to God, encapsulate the life of Dorothy Day, 1897 through 1980. Writing for the Catholic Worker Movement newspaper in 1946, she said, "What we would like to do is change the world, make it a little simpler for people to feed, clothe, and shelter themselves as God intended them to do. And by fighting for better conditions, by crying out unceasingly for the rights of the workers, the poor, of the destitute, the rights of the worthy and the unworthy poor, in other words, we can, to a certain extent, change the world. We can work for the oasis, the little cell of joy and peace in a harried world. We can throw our pebble in the pond and be confident that its ever-widening circle will reach around the world. We repeat, there is nothing we can do but love, and, dear God, please enlarge our hearts to love each other, to love our neighbor, to love our enemy as our friend." Trained as a writer and journalist, she and Peter Morin founded the Catholic Worker Movement and its newspaper, which has been in continuous publication since 1933. She and Morin lived the chaos and challenges of the 20th century: wars, economic depression, class struggle, the nuclear threat, women's suffrage, the civil rights movement, and the fight for LGBTQIA+ rights, among others. In their introduction to their book, Praying with Dorothy Day, Jim Allaire and Rosemary Broughton write, "Dorothy Day's life and legacy is a radical movement, faithful to the gospel and the church, immersed in the social issues of the day, with the aim of transforming both individuals and society. In an age marked by widespread violence, impersonal government, shallow interpersonal commitments, and a quest for self-fulfillment, Day's spirit fosters nonviolence, personal responsibility of all people to the poorest ones among us, and fidelity to community and to God." From journalist to champion for the poor. "Those who cannot see Christ in the poor are atheists indeed," Dorothy Day. As she reached adulthood, Day began taking part in marches and demonstrations for issues such as women's suffrage, By 1927, she was working for the All-America Anti-Imperialist League and then for the Fellowship of Reconciliation, where she retained her membership throughout her life. When she was 30, Day converted to Catholicism, and her die was cast. From that point on, while she continued to be involved in anti-war movements and workers' rights efforts, she spent much of the rest of her life working tirelessly to address issues that afflicted the poorest people then and still to this day. In 1932, she traveled to Washington, D.C. to report on the Hunger March, organized by unemployed workers. In 1950, she again traveled to Washington, D.C. to take part in a week-long fast for peace. Again, writing in 1946 about the purpose of Catholic worker movement, she said, "There is nothing that we can do but love, and dear God, please enlarge our hearts to love each other, to love our neighbor, to love our enemy, as well as our friend." Her lifelong outreach demonstrated how non-resistance creates change as she joined protests and marches in support of her deeply held beliefs. In this, she joined other icons of civil disobedience and peaceful non-resistance, including leaders of the women's movement in the 1960s, such as Gloria Steinem and the founders of the National Organization for Women, Shirley Chisholm, Muriel Fox, Betty Friedan, and Polly Murray. She worked side by side with champions of workers and the poor, including Cesar Chavez and Coretta Scott King. America's best-known champion of nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience shared Day's commitment to solving the plight of the poor. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. founded the Poor People's Campaign, including the Poor People's March on Washington, in 1968 in an effort to gain economic justice for poor people. Reverend Dr. William Barber II reconstituted that campaign for today's poorest Americans, including expanding its focus to include the urban and rural poor, along with white, black, and brown people in our country. In his book, Nonviolence and Social Change, Dr. King makes the case for nonviolent resistance. Using an ambulance running a red light as his example, he writes, "Massive civil disobedience is a strategy for social change that is at least as forceful as an ambulance with its siren full on." Civil disobedience as an American tradition. Power concedes nothing without demand. Frederick Douglass. American culture both embraces and ignores our history of civil disobedience in equal measure. Consider that the first act of civil disobedience took place in Boston Harbor on December 16, 1773. We all know this story and celebrate the courage and independence that both created and grew from the Boston Tea Party, a lasting reminder of our country's founding. Starting in the late 1700s, the abolitionist movement employed strategies that ranged from resistance tactics like public speaking and publishing pamphlets and newspapers to civil disobedience tactics, including boycotting goods made with slave labor and organizing political campaigns. They got in the way with their words, their money, and even their bodies to change the country's reliance on the enslavement of others. Churches, too, acted in accordance with their beliefs, such as the Quakers' involvement in ending slavery. In modern times, any number of churches of various denominations supported the civil rights movement in the 1960s, with members joining in protests and churches opening their doors to offer safe harbor. These actions of resistance and civil disobedience brought a measure of change to our country we might not have known without them. While some argue that churches, their ministers, and their members best stay out of the politics of the day, American activist and former Catholic priest Philip Berrigan offers a different opinion. "I subscribe to the view, both evangelical and Gandhian, that religion and policies are complements, two rhythms of one organism." He writes, "Religion is the interior of politics, politics the exterior of religion, with an interdependence at once reinforcing." In his piece, Christians and Civil Disobedience, writer Bill Muhlenberg argues that Christian scripture spells out three main functions of the state: to maintain justice, to ensure domestic peace and harmony, and to restrain and punish evil. He cites any number of examples of people choosing disobedience to humanity's rules or the state in face of God's commandments, including Jesus before Herod, Moses before Pharaoh, and Paul before Festus. Across history, those who would get in the way of injustice, those who would get into good trouble, as U.S. Congressman John Lewis put it, Those who would sacrifice their safety for the safety of others understand the truth of Douglass's words. Power concedes nothing without demand. The powerful in our country and in our world will not concede even a shred of their power unless confronted with a relentless demand for change. In his book, Across That Bridge, A Vision for Change and the Future of America, Lewis writes, "We can burn as one unified sun that can light up our world and even our universe. This planet can smolder with imagination, burn with creativity, reverberate with love, oneness, and peace. The infinite is possible, but this beauty can only manifest through us." Day put it more succinctly, "The final word is love." Six principles of nonviolence. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. offered these six principles. 1. Nonviolence is a way of life for courageous people. It is active, nonviolent resistance to evil. It is aggressive spirituality, mentally and emotionally. 2. Nonviolence seeks to win friendship and understanding. The result of nonviolence is redemption and reconciliation. The purpose of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. 3. Nonviolence seeks to defeat injustice, not people. Nonviolence recognizes that evildoers are also victims and are not evil people. The nonviolent resistor seeks to defeat evil, not people. 4. Nonviolence holds that suffering can educate and transform. Nonviolence accepts suffering without retaliation. Unearned suffering is redemptive and has tremendous educational and transforming possibilities. 5. Nonviolence chooses love instead of hate. Nonviolence resists violence of the spirit as well as the body. Nonviolent love is spontaneous, unmotivated, unselfish, and creative. 6. Nonviolence believes the universe is on the side of justice. The nonviolent resistor has deep faith that justice will eventually win. Nonviolence believes that God is a God of justice. And from the same issue, Reverend Dr. Cynthia Ramirez Lindenmeyer's monthly column, Spiritual, Not Religious, We Are All One. I enjoy historical fiction and recently finished reading The Nightingale by Christian Hanna. While the author may not explicitly practice science of mind, I was struck by how deeply its principles show up in the universe of the story. Set in German-occupied France during World War II, I appreciate how the author captures the love expressed by the main characters, even when they experience the horrors of war and cruelty. For me, reading The Nightingale became a spiritual awakening, a reminder that we all have the capacity to actively heal the collective consciousness that allows evil to arise. Hitler's actions were horrific, but they were not undertaken by him alone. They were fed by a broader collective that succumbed to the fear these actions created. And this is where science of mind invites us into sacred activism through our thoughts, prayers, and actions. Reading about the Jewish persecution led me to actively treat for healing and unity in our country, especially around the treatment of immigrants. I've been affirming a world where we recognize that there are no others, only one life expressing through each person. Something unexpected happened. I was driving in a neighborhood I didn't know well when I suddenly had a craving for a poppy seed muffin. I found a bakery nearby, but as I was parking, I noticed a visibly distraught woman standing alone. When I approached her, she burst into tears and in Spanish explained that she was from Colombia. She had an immigration appointment at 10 a.m. that she absolutely could not miss, but she had no way to get there. The address was 20 miles away. It was 9:15. I called an Uber and told her not to worry about the cost. She was overwhelmed with gratitude, but I was overwhelmed with something too, a sense that spirit guided me to her. This synchronistic experience reminded me that when we treat for love, unity, and justice, we open ourselves to be instruments of those very qualities. I know that spirit is with the Colombian woman I encountered, and I am grateful that spirit works through us, sometimes even through poppy seed muffin cravings. We turn now to the July-August issue of Spirituality and Health, a Unity publication, and Roadside Assistance for the Spiritual Traveler by Rabbi Rami Shapiro. Question. I believe in God Almighty. Recently, a coworker with whom I barely get along mentioned that she and some friends are praying for me to find the light, as she calls it, and join her church, which I have no interest in doing. I express this to her, but the prayers persist. Now, I pray with a group of my friends for her and her friends to find the light and join my church. I feel foolish about this, but I'm worried that her prayers might be effective if I don't stand up for myself and that God might compel me to join her church. Is there any way out of this? Rabbi Rami, yes. Stop using God as a weapon in your light wars. If God Almighty wanted you to join your co-worker's church, you would have become a member long ago. And if you don't like this woman, why pray for her to join your church? If you believe in an all-powerful God who hears your prayers, the only prayer worth offering is this: may your will be done. That way your prayer is always answered, because if God is genuinely almighty, everything that happens is the will of God. Question: I've devoted my adult life to the pursuit of enlightenment. What changes when I achieve it? Rabbi Rami: nothing. As the 9th century Shan Zen master Kuigyan Wexin taught, before I studied Shan, I saw mountains as mountains and rivers as rivers. When I achieved a deeper understanding, I realized that mountains are not mountains and rivers are not rivers. But now that I see clearly, mountains are once again mountains and rivers are once again rivers. To paraphrase St. Paul in 1 Corinthians 13:12, before enlightenment, you view the world through a distorting lens that separates everything from everything else. After enlightenment, the lens is clear, and you see that everything is part of the one thing. What you perceive doesn't change, only the quality of your perception. Question: my granddaughter is interested in astrology. She claims it's a scientific alternative to religion and appreciates that it doesn't focus on sin, damnation, or politics. But is it legitimate? Rabbi Rami: since we are made of stardust, you might view an astrological chart as an MRI of your cosmic body. Along with dream interpretation, reading tarot cards, sand play therapy, and other practices, astrology can unlock the wisdom hidden in our subconscious minds. Can an astrologer scam your granddaughter? Absolutely. So can psychics, clergy, doctors, and con artists in every field. If your granddaughter's interest drains her bank account and weakens her critical thinking, she's being scammed. If it nurtures her spirit and enriches her quest for truth, encourage her to learn what she can. Question: as a Christian, I'm taught to love everyone, but honestly, there are certain people I hate. Does that make me a hypocrite? Rabbi Rami: no. It makes you non-Christian. If God is love and you feel hate, then you've turned away from God. To be a faithful Christian means to stand in love, with love, and for love against the forces that crucify love, even in the name of Christ. This is why the idea that God is love is a bold and dangerous stance, one that even those who pretend to affirm it secretly fear and violate. Question: I am a spiritual seeker. I meditate daily, journal regularly, consult a spiritual director, and read spiritual books and scriptures from many faiths. Why is it so hard to find God? Why is the truth so hidden? Rabbi Rami: in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses states that the truth isn't in the sky or across the sea, but in your mouth and in your heart. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus claims that the kingdom of heaven isn't in the sky or sea, but within and around you. The Zen 10 ox herding pictures portray the seeker of truth as searching for an ox, which symbolizes truth, while riding on it. J. Krishnamurti teaches, truth is a pathless land. Why pathless? Because no road can lead to where you already are. Truth is hidden only because you refuse to recognize it. Do you want to see God? Look around and within you. It is all God. God isn't hiding from you. You are hiding from God. But since you too are God, even your hiding is an illusion. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications, and you're currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. And you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app in Apple and Android phones. We return now to Channeled Messages from Deep Space, Wisdom for a Changing World by Mike Dooley with Tracy Farquhar. And she channels a group called Frank from Rahoshka, and they have learned how to travel without having to use physical bodies or spaceships or anything of that sort. We are in part one, Life on Rahoshka, and we are in the section, What are the top 10 ways your society differs from ours? So far it was monetary exchange, marriage and relationships, health, political structure, education, spirituality and religion, food and nutrition, science and technology. And we pick up today with number 9, energy and fuel. There was once a form of energy that was mined on our planet in a similar manner that your fossil fuels are currently extracted from the Earth. Our energy needs are quite different from yours, but there still exists a need for fuel, and we were finding that the extraction of these fuels was damaging our environment, which was already limited in its habitable space. Once it was determined that a new system of fuel was required, new research was done to experiment with different types of material from our planet's physical structure that had not ever been experimented with as a possible form of energetic fuel. It was in this research that different types of crystalline structures originally found while investigating subterranean forms of life, as previously shared, were experimented with, and we were able to discover one type of crystal that emitted its own form of energy that could be harnessed in an unlimited way. This discovery changed the way we utilize energy forever, and there is no longer the need for destructive types of mining and the scarring of the land in order to extract vast quantities of fuel. A small number of these crystals is all that is needed for huge amounts of energy, and these crystals do not require replacement for long periods of time. So our land is preserved, and the energy is produced in a clean and predictable manner. The research that discovered this type of fuel would not have occurred had there not been a crisis in the environment and a dire need for change. We would suggest that your researchers expand their scope beyond the profit margin to seek out a similar type of energy alternative. 10. Entertainment and leisure. Our current structures of work, education, and family allow for more free time, and there is more emphasis placed on the need for leisure and relaxation. This has created new industries that are geared toward pleasurable, interesting, and relaxing pursuits, which help to quiet the mind while allowing for a stimulation of learning and a wide range of self-expression. Artistic and creative pursuits are highly encouraged, so there are many programs for those who wish to spend time creating art and music. Large groups will gather for cooperative projects involving dance, art, and music. Many forms of writing as an art form are experimented with, and again, groups have emerged who have created unique forms of literature and expressive verse. There are groups that work with the art of dreaming, and those who use telepathic thought as a means of creation. Science has created methods to make thought forms visible, creating a sort of performance art that is quite incredible. And new methods of expressive movement are always being performed in public forums. There is a culture of artistic expression that is richer than it has ever been in our world. And this has not only created more beauty and emotional healing in our culture, it has created a flow of energy that has benefited all in myriad ways. Mike, given your civilization's rise and success, can you share what they would view as the 10 most important values a society or an individual can have and honor to be happy and successful? We are quite delighted with this question and all that it implies. It is quite true that we discovered, through the deliberate and intentional shift of the trajectory of our civilization, that there were certain values and aspects of being that were vital to that shift, and that many of them had been quite lacking in the periods of our society's degradation. 1. Self-expression. This is the greatest strength of the individual and of a thriving society as a whole. It is the aspect of the individual that is most suppressed in societies that seek to create a sense of blind obedience and mindless consumerism. The institutional influences on the will of the individual will often seek to devalue the inherent gifts, talents, and passions of the individual in favor of a lifestyle that forces the individual into a more traditional role of wage earner, consumer, and rule follower. Self-expression can be seen to be dangerous to the type of institutionalized structure. Creativity will be undervalued, and those who operate outside of a created structure of limitations will be viewed as delusional or dysfunctional. Structures will be put into place that create deliberate divisions in that structure. Those who fit in will find their sense of identity with the crowd, while those who do not will be outcast and left to find their own sense of identity. You can see numerous examples of this structure in your own culture, and yet you can also see how the shift is beginning to create a sense of wonder and reverence for the misfit, rather than an automatic derision. The free-thinking creatives who truly live outside the perceived and invented structures of categorized behavior, standards of beauty and worth, financial status, and intellectual standards are the forerunners of the new age in which the entire structure of what is valued, deemed worthy, and admired shifts toward a more genuine and heart-centered form of self-expression. 2. Self-worth. Self-expression is not possible without a sense of the intrinsic value one feels for one's sense of self, one's dreams and desires, one's abilities and gifts. Once again, the society that is structured to devalue the individual with the intention to have better control over it will seek to create a perpetual state of lack within that individual. The idealized sense of perfection that is held up as the ultimate goal of life is deliberately unattainable and will cause those who adapt this into their lives as truth to suffer a never-ending sense of lack, which causes them to continually seek to fill that void with consumerism and unhealthy behavior. As your society begins its shift toward a more compassionate, heart-centered, and resonant way of being, the individual will begin to understand the intrinsic value of their own being to the whole and will be more prone to follow the desires of the heart towards self-expression. And while not all who begin to move toward a stronger sense of self-worth will comprehend it, they are, in this journey, becoming more aware of their direct connection to Source and conscious understanding that their growing sense of self-worth and self-expression is the ultimate celebration of the divine within. 3. Service. In a culture that seeks to dominate rather than encourage the individual, the values of self-expression and self-worth will be deemed as acts of selfishness, self-centeredness, and sinful conceit. In fact, it is a natural aspect of these values to have the desire to use them in service to others, since this is a value that resonates most harmoniously with the frequency of the spirit and the attunement of the heart. Those individuals who are most removed from their sense of self-worth and self-expression will live in a perpetual unconscious state, and so will have no connection to their heart's desire to be of service. They will be the ones who are continually seeking outside of themselves to fill the perceived voids in their beings. It is through that distraction that they will navigate their life path blindly, with little regard for how their behavior and energy affect others and the world around them. It is those who are truly in touch with the divine expression of their being who will most deeply feel the urge to be of service and use their intrinsic gifts to enlighten, uplift, comfort, and express compassion to all they come across. They will be the ones who create beauty, useful technology, new systems, and better institutions. They will instinctively feel what is needed and will find ways to fulfill those needs with their gifts. Being of service creates a natural state of joy that is not possible in any other way. Those who rarely experience this state of joy are missing that experience only because they're not experiencing the true connection of their divine will with Source energy. All beings will be given the opportunity to be of service at various points in their lives. Not all will heed this call, but those who do will find the highest form of fulfillment, passion, and lust for the divine expression of life. 4. Compassion. This is a value that is often misunderstood to mean suffering for others in their pain. The compassion that we are referring to here is simply a heart-centered connection to others through the realization that all beings are intrinsically connected by and to Source energy, and as such, there's an aspect of ourselves in all others. While this type of compassion can sometimes allow us to feel the pain of others, it is not in the feeling of that pain that healing can occur. Rather, it is in the feeling of that pain that we are motivated to act in a way that eases the pain of the other in whatever way is available to us. Truly compassionate beings do not feel the need to heal, save, or rescue other beings from their situations. Rather, they seek to uplift, empower, and motivate those individuals to find their own inner sense of peace and truth. Taking on the ills of the world is not a true expression of compassion, as it does not ease the suffering. In fact, it expands it as we pass it on to others through our energetic expression in the world. True compassion leads to a sense of service, which is intrinsically connected to the sense of value one has for one's own gifts and the need to express those gifts in the world. If one is expressing a certain talent or gift in the world and understanding the value of it, one will automatically be drawn into putting those gifts into service to others through acts of compassion. Expressing these values every day in the smallest acts of kindness and in larger acts of extreme service creates the same ripple effects of energetic connection between all beings and starts the cycle of compassionate action that will ultimately be the force that shifts the energy of your culture into a different realm. 5. Playfulness. In the daily routine of the institutionalized culture, this is a value that is sorely undervalued and severely lacking. In the seriousness of the workplace, the focus on tragedy and horror in the media, and society's anticipation of impending doom, there is a sense that playfulness creates a trivialization of life and ignores all that is wrong and needing attention. The truth is that in the temporary nature of your physical existence, all that you are focused on as tragic, horrific, or evil are simply aspects of a transitory existence. More, this focus then blinds you to all else, including the overwhelming predominance of all that's good and beautiful in your existence. You thereby become unable to find joy in your daily existence, creating a culture of routines and hopelessness. When we are playful, we are in the midst of our most highly creative expressions of ourselves. We are opening the channels to higher wisdom and guidance through the energetic flow that is created in the act of play. It causes us to drop barriers, cease trying to control, and simply allow an energetic flow of joyful expression. This is where you will truly find your most authentic nature and your highest connection to divine wisdom. Children experience this state continuously by design, as they are in an accelerated state of evolution and learning in their early years. As play becomes more discouraged and seen as an expression of immaturity, learning slows and creativity is squelched. As we brought back play into our culture, we found that it strengthened not only the individual connection to self-expression, but also the sense of cooperation and a true sense of connection with all beings. 6. Patience. As the pace of life accelerates with your advances in technology, you then experience a false sense of urgency with regard to all else in life, which leads to a growing sense that you're running out of time, both individually and as a planet, and the need for instant gratification. The virtue of patience is slipping by the wayside. The act of waiting can be a moment of zen-like peace, or it can be a frustrating, frantic experience of irritation and aggravation. The art of slowly moving toward one's goal is no longer seen as an advantage, as it always appears that someone else will come up from behind and overtake you. The act of creation, however, is a process needing time to coalesce and respond to the frequencies that are creating it. In the mind of one whose very nature is based on impatience, everything appears to be moving in slow motion, and the main complaint is that everyone should move just a little bit faster. The expectation that all things should come to fruition in a quick and predictable way causes one to be continually anxious about reaching goals that are perpetually out of reach. This forward-thinking energy is often admired, as you believe that these types of people are the real innovators and that they are the ones who will create the changes in your world. However, we would like to point out that the stress placed on the body and mind by continually looking toward what's next not only affects the health of the individual, it also creates huge rifts between the personalities of those who are forever looking at the future and those who are just trying to navigate through their current life situations. Patience does not only mean waiting for life to happen to you, it means understanding that the journey forward is where life occurs and that you will never reach the end of the journey, even when the current leg of that journey ends. 7. Allowance. Along with diminishing patience is the need to control. Much of your society's ills can be traced to a pathological need to control all events and other people. In this type of personality, there will be tremendous stress felt in the body and mind when it appears that circumstances are out of one's control. While it is true that you are all co-creators of all you see, that does not mean that these creations will appear overnight, or that you must feel a compulsive urge to continually churn out the manifestations of your imagination. To those who have trouble relinquishing control, we suggest this. Imagine yourself on a rowboat alone, and you are paddling against the current. You will soon realize that all the work you're doing paddling has only landed you back where you came from. Understand that a great deal of your creative influence is initiated through your energetic intentions, and that there is a potential for much peace and flow if you begin the process through the energetic field of intentions and leave the rest of the creating up to the universe. If you express a desire or dream, allow yourself to believe that the Creator has heard you and that you will begin to receive some valuable guidance at any time, building up excitement toward what's to come rather than picking apart whatever it is that you've created is the hallmark of the joy of abundance and the full expression of one's soul. Pull up the oars, trust the current, and simply dip the oars in occasionally to steer. Allow ease and flow into your life, and you will find that things will come much more easily to you. 8. Flexibility. As with allowance, being flexible creates a sense of ease in the process of creating, and it removes rigid expectations that can cause so much suffering. When one remains flexible with what they believe to be right or wrong, good or bad, desirable or repulsive, one will find the best way to create a compassionate and forgiving environment within which to practice kindness and co-creation. Rigid views, narrow expectations, and a black-and-white stance on right and wrong create enormous stress on the mind and body. Since the natural laws dictate a balance of give and take, straight and winding roads, and predictable and so-called strange behavior of others. Think of the fluidity of the body in acts such as dance, yoga, and gymnastics. If the body were to remain rigid and unyielding, the beauty of these practices would not be possible. Your life path is such that it will afford you a myriad of different and sometimes challenging experiences that offer the opportunity to grow, learn, and evolve the mind, body, and soul. If these lessons are avoided out of a rigid sense of judgment based on outward or surface experience, frustrations and a sense that you should be thinking of doing something else will ensue, leaving you with little energy to place yourself out into the wider world. One can bend while staying true to one's intentions. One can flex while not allowing cruel or unjustified behavior. You can move through those events that challenge you the most without trying to force the circumstances themselves. 9. An open mind. Practicing flexibility and patience can lead to the phenomenon known as an open mind. Too often we find that humans tend toward believing that their aspects of being should contain very staunch and rigid views on certain social and world events. There can be a very rigid sense of what is right and wrong, and the ensuing judgment that arises from this viewpoint can close a mind to the flow of energetic information that is available to all. It is the closed minds of researchers, scholars, and medical practitioners that have prevented them from seeing the real truths that are already being felt by many. It is through the rigid stance that only certain aspects of life are real and others are either the product of imagination or psychosis that disrupts the connection to the energetic field of the divine and the energetic field of others. As such, the institutions of education, medicine, and business all encourage a closed-minded aspect of reality that is based on the interpretations of the fallible brain and the somewhat arrogant stance of one who judges. Maintaining an open mind while still practicing discernment can be the key to your survival. 10. Imagination. The process of all creation begins with the imagination, which is a form of consciousness in direct connection with the higher vibrations of spirit and source. It is within the moments of active imagination that all great things are birthed and where the very universe came to be. However, the imagination is often downplayed as a place of fantasy and mirth that is not relevant to the real life experience. By claiming that some experiences are just imagination, you are negating one of the purest and deepest connections to divine source energy and the energy of the higher self and all of its creative power. When the imagination is stimulated through self-expression, play, and creative pursuits, that direct channel is opened and all possibilities will come pouring into the consciousness. We would recommend that the term imagination no longer be vilified and that it be encouraged in all walks of life, from childhood education to higher learning, in the workplace and in the home. Storytelling, music, writing, and the arts are wonderful ways to build the powers of the imagination and understand their value. Mike, what are the top 10 dreams or goals of your planet's inhabitants? Although we've overcome many of the challenges that were leading us on a path of destruction, the individual dreams and goals of our inhabitants are not that much different from yours. In fact, our experience has shown that all beings in the physical state with higher consciousness desire many of the same things. 1. Peace of mind. Even though the everyday stresses of living have been greatly reduced by the changes we've made in our society, there are still other worries and concerns that can disturb the peaceful state of mind that many strive for. We continue to be concerned about the state of our planet and its future, and we are concerned for our children and what their lives will be like as they mature. There are still those who seek to return to some of the old systems, which were so damaging, and there are issues of diminishing resources and the instability of the land due to prior mistreatment. While we believe that we have created the most stable structure possible at this time, the future is never certain, and so there are many who find it difficult to maintain an optimistic and peaceful existence. 2. Purpose. Our society greatly encourages the discovery and expression of one's individual gifts and talents. As such, it encourages all individuals to discover that which brings them the greatest satisfaction and joy in their life. This discovery comes easily to some, but others find it more difficult, and they sometimes struggle with the idea of purpose and passion. There are those whose passion is a singular form of work or talent, and they will pursue that passion throughout their lifetime. But there are others for whom this passion is not as clear, and they will try many different occupations and creative endeavors before they are able to settle into what it is that makes them happiest. And there are still others who struggle with the notion of purpose their whole lives and become frustrated with the notion that they should even have a life's purpose at all. We would say that even the struggle with the notion of purpose is in itself a purpose, as it allows the individual to experience many different forms of self-expression in one lifetime. But often the individual will not view it that way and will desire a more stable sense of purpose that brings them satisfaction and fulfillment. 3. Status. Without a monetary system to create a class system and a sense of status through wealth, there are some who desire a different type of status within their community. While there are positions of leadership available to some, there are others who feel cheated out of the ability to reach a high status and so will look for other ways to achieve a sense of importance and a role that earns them some degree of respect. This sometimes causes a conflict of personalities, as these individuals who seek status are often driven by ego and a need to feel important, rather than expressing a true desire to serve, and it is this type of personality that led us in the direction of a dangerous downfall of our society and its systems. We have found that while we can create new and better systems for the greater good of all, we cannot change the personalities of the individuals within that system. And so it is quite inevitable that conflicts of interest will arise, even in times of peace and abundance. As the notion of status diminishes in favor, these issues also diminish, but they still tend to arise from time to time. 4. Creative expression. As stated previously, this has been found to be one of the best ways to create a form of self-expressive energy, which is needed for the evolution of our species and planet to continue in a positive direction. And so creativity is encouraged among all our inhabitants. Of course, there will be those who exhibit a great deal of creative talent, and some who do not feel that their creativity meets certain standards, and so they will be reluctant to try different forms of art, whether it be visual arts or performance. For these individuals, we encourage different forms of self-expression that may not be seen as traditional art forms, such as design or technology or storytelling or botany. But there are still those who will be harsh critics of their own creativity and will be self-conscious in the expression of themselves. Again, this is a problem that is diminishing, but one that we're seeking to eliminate with a broader sense of the definition of creativity. 5. Happiness through love. This we find is quite the universal desire, as all beings wish to give and receive love. It is at the core of our beings and essential to our survival, and its expression is one that dictates much of the activity in our lives. Even with a looser sense of expression of affection and love in our society now, it is still something that many individuals continually seek and struggle with. Relationships are inherently challenging, and it is within those challenges that we are better able to know ourselves. But also within those challenges can be great heartbreak and suffering. And so the heart seeks the purest expression of itself in another, despite the struggles inherent in that search. It is our contention that this continual search is a reflection of our desire to connect with divine love, and it is this quest that drives us to find that connection with others in our physical lives. As with all societies, there will be some for whom loving relationships come more easily than others, and some who find satisfaction in traditional relationships, and some who do not wish to limit themselves in that way. But in all cases, it is a desire to love and be loved that drives us forward in our work, in our social lives, and in our personal relationships. 6. A more stable environment. As we've stated, we inhabit a planet whose environment can be quite harsh. This creates long periods of time when we must avoid being out in the air, and this can cause some hardship for some who desire the freedom of the outdoors. These individuals find themselves longing for a place where they're able to experience more freedom in the environment and less confinement due to the nature of our planet. There have been scientific speculations about how to create change in the environment of our planet, but none of these come without risks, and so we've been reluctant to experiment with them. But the dream remains of a planet that affords a pleasant atmosphere similar to that which you enjoy on Earth. And in the coming weeks, we'll continue with this, with 7, a deeper connection to source through others, 8, a new home planet, 9, a deeper understanding of universal laws, and 10, beauty. For now, we come to the end of our program. And as always, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, just let the station know, and they will let me know, and I can discuss them on air. For now, I wish you a beautiful, joyous, and peaceful new week, and I very much look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher Program.